Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link on this Thursday, the 21st of January. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, protests in Ghana over increasing utility and fuel prices.
I'm a Ghanaian. I pay utility tariff as every other Ghanaian. That's why I'm here. We are suffering as Ghanaians. We can't pay our electricity bills. Now, fuel increment is another burden on our neck.
In a town in Cameroon, Christians and Muslims joined forces to fight militant Islamists.
We have applauded this initiative in which Muslims take guard of churches and Christians take guard of mosques. We condemn the actions of Boko Haram.
And another chance to hear this week's installment in our radio drama series, Crime Fighters. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in Ghana, where thousands of people have taken to the streets in the capital Accra to demonstrate against recent rises in the price of water, electricity and fuel. They want the government to force the country's Public Utility Regulatory Commission to rescind the increases. The protests are being organised by the Ghanaian Trades Union Congress, which is threatening to stage a nationwide strike today and tomorrow if their demands are not met. Isaac Kelechi has the full story.
Hundreds of Ghanaian workers pouring onto the streets of Ghana's capital Accra to protest recent hikes in utility tariffs and petroleum prices. Recently, there was a 59% increase of water tariff, while electricity tariff was increased by 67%, meaning that many Ghanaians cannot pay their water and electricity bills. Addressing the demonstrators, the Secretary General of the Trades Union Congress of Ghana, Kofi Asamoah, defended the actions of the workers, insisting
organized labor has called for a reduction in the utility tariffs and a withdrawal of the energy sector levies at 8 Naira. The working group set up to work out an amicable solution has failed to produce satisfactory results. Government remains adamant to our demands.
But Employment and Labor Relations Minister Haruna Idrisu says actions by the labor unions were uncalled for since negotiations were still going on.
And organized labor have asked on government to withdraw the energy sector levy and review tariffs down to 50%. That is where we are in the course of the negotiations. And that is what displeases me personally about their intended declared action to proceed on a demonstration and strike actions whilst negotiations is ongoing. It's like negotiating with a gun on your head.
Leaders of the unions will resume negotiations with government this week, but insist on withdrawing their services across the country on Thursday and Friday. These demonstrators say their intended actions are justified as they decry the hardship the tariff hikes have had on them.
The problem is not we are against the government, but the hardship on the ground is too much.
I'm a Ghanaian. I pay utility tariff as every other Ghanaian. That's why I'm here. We want him to listen. We are suffering as Ghanaians. We can't pay our electricity bills. Now, fuel increment too is another burden on our neck. We can't just cope within the system.
The street protests ahead of an intended strike action for the next 2 days is likely to slow productivity for an economy that is already struggling.
Isaac Kelechi in Accra, and staying with the protests in Ghana, Eunice Wanjuru spoke to Kwesi Danso Achiampong, a labour expert and former deputy chairman of Ghana's National Labour Commission. She started by asking him about the state of Ghana's economy and the condition of the labour market within that economy.
For the economy, we know it's not in good shape, and the labour market too. You know, Ghana is not, we don't have a very high wage for employees. Notwithstanding that maybe the top, they may have high wages. The average thing is that Ghana is a low wage country. And therefore, if the economic policies are such that almost every price will go up. Definitely, it puts the labor leadership under pressure, and their members will definitely react. That is the pressure that they are putting on the leadership to do something, to compel government to reduce at least the fuel and some of the utility increases that were placed on those things.
Water and electricity prices have increased by more than 50%. What could be the reasons behind these hikes?
Initially, we were depending on the hydro energy. Unfortunately, we've experienced very bad rain, and therefore we are moving to thermal. And thermal will require purchase of fuel and other things. And therefore, the cost of producing thermal energy is a little higher than the hydro.
Considering that this is not the first time that such protests are happening, do you think the government will bow down to the pressure from the labor unions?
There's a need for them to make some compromise, at least on the fuel. Because if you look at the fuel price in the world today, it's very unjustifiable for you to sustain an increase in fuel price, looking at the level where petrol is selling today. And therefore, that strengthens the hands of the organized labor that government has to increase. It's not this time round, because the world market doesn't support that. Within the Ghana labor system, you realize that we have the public sector employees and the private sector, and their membership constitutes organized labor in Ghana. Government is able to amass enough taxes, as they've announced, about 10% wage increase for the public sector employees. But because of the energy problem, a lot of the private sector were not able to produce anything, and therefore, it's very difficult for their union to approach management for immediate wage increase, even now that the power seems to be getting back to some normalcy. So that is the dilemma the leadership find themselves, that they cannot go to their employers easily to demand immediate wage increase. And therefore, all those things have to be taken into consideration so that they can reach a settlement that will be fair to both sides.
Kwezi Danso Achi-Ampong, Labour expert and former Deputy Chairman of Ghana's National Labour Commission.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
According to the news agency AFP, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to face questions at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland today about his handling of the Boko Haram insurgency. Meanwhile, in a town in northern Cameroon, which, like Nigeria, is also being targeted by the Islamists, local Muslims and Christians have joined forces to protect one another. Christians are keeping guard over mosques during prayers, and equally, Muslims stand watch over churches. Abubakar Jolo has this report by Moki Kinseka.
It's the usual call to prayer here at the Mozogo Central Mosque as hundreds of Muslim men and women get ready for prayers. Outside, dozens of men stand guard. They are not the usual security guards protecting the mosque. Those guards are inside, praying. These men are Christian volunteers serving as guards while the Muslim guards go for prayers. Joseph Klofu, a member of the Protestant Church, explains why he is protecting this mosque instead of his church.
I feel frustrated seeing my brothers and sisters dying. I must act while praying to God to send his angels and warriors to fight Boko Haram.
Boko Haram has intensified its campaign in Cameroon this year in effort to create an Islamist caliphate in the region. Jafaru Alamin, a member of the Mozogo Central Mosque, says he also defends churches in Mozogo because the Nigerian militant group does not represent Islam.
I'm out to fight because Boko Haram is a group of bad people. Islam condemns all what they have been doing to both Christians and Muslims, who are all God's creatures.
The population of Cameroon is 23 million. 40% are Christian, 20% Muslims, and 40% hold indigenous beliefs. Midiyewa Bakari, governor of Far North Cameroon, says only a united Cameroon between all religious groups can defeat the Islamists.
We have applauded this initiative in which Muslims take guard of churches and Christians take guard of mosques. We condemn the actions of Boko Haram.
Cameroon's Minister of Communication and Government Spokesperson, Issa Chorima Bakari, welcomes the cooperation between Christians and Muslims in the fight against Boko Haram.
Cameroon is one of those few countries in the world where priests and imams both go to churches and mosques to preach and pray during ecumenical services. It is a treasure to keep.
Boko Haram lost most of its territories in a regional offensive. The group has therefore changed its tactics by resorting to lone wolf suicide attacks, mainly targeting churches, mosques, schools and marketplaces.
Mark Ekenseka compiled that report from northern Cameroon. The Kenyan capital Nairobi is choking under mounds of garbage. Alleyways and back streets of the central business district have been turned into unofficial dumping sites. Kenyans are furious and are calling on local authorities to clean up their capital. They, in turn, say it is a difficult problem to solve as the local Dandora dumping site is full to capacity. Andrew Wasiki has filed this report.
Nairobi residents are angry. This is because after ushering in the new year, they were greeted with mounds of garbage littered across the busy streets of the Kenyan capital. Piles of garbage stretch from the central business district to residential areas, polluting residents with unpleasant odor and rendering roads impassable. The National Youth Service in Kenya has been given a one-week contract to clean up the city, which is home to over 4 million people. Nelson Maina, a trader at the Muthurwa market, told me that City Hall has not been doing its work properly.
This garbage mound has been here for the past 2 months. They only collect a small amount, but come tomorrow the heap is growing larger and larger.
Nairobi produces over 200 metric tons of domestic, agricultural, hospital and industrial wastes every day. Wastes that makes its way to the 30-acre Dandora dam site, a suburb located 8 kilometers to the east of the Nairobi city center and said to provide a livelihood for over 4,000 street families. But as Nairobi residents lament to the Kenyan government to clean their city, a move that will see the rubbish collected and dumped at the landfill in Dandora, residents from the suburb plead with the government to relocate the site, which was declared full in 2001. But Nairobi Governor Evans Kidero admitted that the county government had been overwhelmed by the increasing garbage in the city.
We've had feasibility studies done on how to generate electricity or waste recirculation, and we are working with a company called EMC Solutions of Germany, who are going to put in 270 million euros for the building of a segregation plant.
The Dandora dam site is surrounded by slums, which are home to over 1 million residents. Trucks ferry garbage from all over the Kenyan capital and dump them at the site. Teresia Wanjiku, a mother of two, told DW that the landfill should be relocated as it poses a health hazard to the people.
We've had many children going to hospital, especially with the chest problems and also stomach problems. In a day, like 10 pupils go to visit the clinic.
And that report was compiled by Andrew Wasiki. And now, the forces of law and order are trying to solve the murder of a vet in this week's instalment of our radio drama series, Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome back. It's time for Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. This is the fourth episode called Crime of Passion. We're in the middle of a murder investigation led by Detective Allen. The young vet, Patrick, has been stabbed to death, and so far, his widow, Lucy, is the main suspect. Some new evidence has just come to light. It seems Patrick was having an affair with someone called Betty. And on Patrick's computer, the police found a blackmail letter addressed to Mr. G. This is a notorious local poacher.
and Alan's colleague, Carl, is looking for him. In today's episode, we start off at the police station, where the two officers are comparing notes.
Hey, Alan. Do you want some coffee?
I know, thanks, Carl. I've got something better to wake you up.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
Believe it or not, Mr. G has come up in my investigation.
Mr. G? Really? How?
Apparently, someone was blackmailing him. We found a letter on the victim's computer. It mentions a video of Mr. G that reveals his true identity.
Wow. Alan, exciting. You have to tell me all about it.
Sure. First, though, I'm going to ask Lucy about it. She's still our prime suspect. I might have more news for you later. I'm heading to the interrogation room now.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Yeah. So, how are you today, Lucy?
How do you think, Alan? Uncomfortable. That's how I am. Uncomfortable and miserable.
Who is Mr. G?
Mr. G? No idea. Nobody knows who he is.
Well, somebody does. And it could have been Patrick. We found a letter on his computer addressed to Mr. G. A blackmail letter.
What are you talking about, Alan?
The blackmailer told Mr. G to leave a ransom near your house. Tell me, Lucy. Were you or your husband blackmailing Mr. G?
No! I don't know anything about any blackmail.
What about Patrick? Could he have known who Mr. G is?
He never mentioned it.
But you knew Patrick was having an affair. That's why you threatened to kill him, isn't it?
Yes, but I already told you I didn't mean it.
Did you know who the other woman was?
No, I didn't. And Patrick wouldn't tell me.
And that made you so angry you took the knife.
I didn't kill him, Alan. I didn't kill him, okay? Will you listen to me?
Okay, all right. Calm down. Officer, take Lucy back to her cell. I'll talk to her again later.
Meanwhile, in downtown Bovu, wildlife photographer Musa and his girlfriend Betty are starting their day. Musa's just got back from a long working trip in the jungle, and now he wants to edit some of the material he shot in the last few weeks.
Betty?
Yes, Musa? What is it?
Did you see the hard drive I left by the computer last time I was home?
Damn, I forgot to put it back. You are hard what? Wait, let me turn off the water so I can hear you better.
My hard drive. The little black box. Have you seen it?
No. I haven't seen it. Why?
It had some important footage on it from my last trip. I left it on the desk by the computer. Where could it be?
I don't know. Are you sure you left it there?
Of course I'm sure, Betty. I always put my raw footage next to the computer for editing later. You didn't move it or anything?
Excuse me? Why would I touch your boring stuff?
I'm asking because there are only two of us living in this house.
Give me a break. Maybe you dropped it in the jungle. Don't blame me if you can't look after your things, Musa.
That drive has some very sensitive material on it. If you've put it somewhere, please give it back.
Police! Open up!
Instead of one suspect, Alan lives with two, Betty and Musa. His reason? Well, what if Musa found out about the affair between Patrick and his girlfriend and killed his rival? First though, Alan wants to know what Betty has to say about her relationship with Patrick.
So Betty, how did you know Patrick?
He was my friend.
Just a friend? Nothing else? When was the last time you saw him?
It was a long time ago. I don't remember.
No, Betty, that's not going to fly, I'm afraid. You're in very serious trouble here. You'd better start telling me what you know.
I don't know what you're talking about, Detective Alan. I haven't done anything and I don't know anything. I don't know why I'm here.
Where were you on the 15th at about 6 o'clock in the evening?
15th? 6 o'clock? Why are you asking this silly question?
Betty.
I was at home, sleeping.
Sleeping? Alone?
Hey, don't be so rude.
Were you alone or not?
I was with my boyfriend.
Oh. You mean your other boyfriend, Musa? I'll check that.
What are you talking about? There is no other boyfriend.
Did you and Patrick have an intimate relationship?
Me and Patrick? No.
But why are you still lying to me? We found a message on Patrick's phone, and it says, Betty, I don't think we should see each other anymore. I love my wife, and I want to stay with her. I'm sorry, Patrick. Now, tell me the truth. Did you kill Patrick because he left you?
I did not kill him. I didn't even know he was dead. Please, let me go.
Here's what I think happened. After he sent you the message, you went to see him, and he refused to listen to you, so you stabbed him.
I did not kill Patrick. I'm not a killer. You've got to believe me.
Did he ever speak to you about Mr. G?
No.
Okay, Betty. It seems you don't want to talk to me. You'll wish you did, though, when you're up against us in court. We'll take your fingerprints before we let you go. So, don't leave town, huh?
Yes, officer.
So Betty's been set free, but for how long? Meanwhile, back in the jungle, the poachers are still going about their business.
Hold it. What is it? There's a leopard in that tree. Quiet. Oh, man, where?
Shh.
You killed it. Oh, man, why did you do that?
Shut up. He's not dead yet.
Oh!
Now he's dead.
But did you have to kill it?
Would you rather I let it maul you?
Oh, man, I feel so bad when we kill these animals.
Then why do you do it?
Because I need the money, of course. It's one thing to kill elephants. We can sell their tusks. But a leopard? What good is that?
You really are naive, aren't you? Take your knife and I'll show you how to skin it. We'll sell the hide to traditional healers. They think it can heal the spirit or some such nonsense. Besides, people like to wear leopard skin. It's a sign of wealth.
Huh? We can sell it?
No, we can eat it. Of course we can sell it, you dumbass. Hello? Yes, Mr. G. Yes?
Yes, we found the elephants, but they took off.
Yes. We are tracking them right now.
What?
I don't know. Yes? I'll see what we can do. Mr. G, I'm sorry. God damn it.
What is it? What did he want?
Mr. G received another threatening letter. I don't understand it.
And that's where we have to end for today. What will happen next time? Will Alan get any closer to unraveling the truth about Patrick's death? Until we meet again, you can find this and other episodes on our website at dw.com/crimefighters. You can also follow us on Facebook. Take care. Bye-bye.
Our main story is here on Africa Link. Ghanaian workers have taken to the streets in protest at higher utility and fuel prices. And in a town in Cameroon, Christians and Muslims are protecting one another against attacks by Islamist militants. We welcome your comments on this programme in an SMS to country code 49 160 957 595 10, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or in a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.